So I was brought up in a Catholic church, as you guys know, and Catholics never did much with eschatology. I remember Mom, the Left Behind series came out. This was, I don't know, what's that, 20, 25 years ago now? And, there was a lot of talk about the rapture, and Mom was, "You believe in that?" Said, "Well, of course." "We don't. That's a bunch of nonsense and stuff like," I don't want to misquote her, but she used some harsh language. And I said, "You don't believe in the resurrection?" "Oh, yeah, I believe in the resurrection." We talked, and I said, "So Jesus is coming back, and then what?" "And then that's it." "What's it?" "Jesus come back, that's it." Wow, some highly developed eschatology there. So what we have is we have churches don't talk about it all. I remember a church that I went to, and the man was a devout man of God. He was fine. He wasn't a heretic or anything, pre-Calvary Chapel. And he would not touch the book of the Revelation with a 10-foot pole. It's too controversial. It's the only Bible book that promises a blessing if you read it. And I said, we should, he conceded in that he taught through the first few chapters, the seven letters to the seven churches. And if you ask me, kind of beat us up, with, "You've left your first love." And there's room for that, and that's fine if that's the case. But he was kind of the one who was always charging you to do this and do this and do this. He had grace, but it wasn't his long suit. Anyway. And so that's a typical church. I didn't grow up with eschatology. But now we have this. And, if you don't have like eschatology in the Bible, you don't have the end times down, boy, you're missing a bit. There's a big gap. So I'm studying through Zechariah, because that's going to be in a while. I don't. After I finish Romans on Sunday nights, so I'm going to be in Zechariah. But it's coming up. And so, it's really a big mystery to a lot of people, but if you get the rest of your eschatology down, it fits in nicely. Anyway, I wanted to get through Matthew chapter 24, so I better, get on my horse and ride. Okay, last time we were together, and he sent, verse 31, he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. He, Jesus, now we get a trumpet, so people will say, "Oh, that's the rapture." But if that's it, it's at the end of the tribulation. I don't believe it is. I think it's just the gathering of his elect. Well, Adam, isn't that the rapture? No, his elect on the earth. The church is gone at least 7 years prior, and perhaps longer than that. We don't exactly know. The time between the rapture of the church and the beginning of the tribulation. Some people think those are concurrent. There's no real reason to think so. It could separate by many years. I don't think it will, personally, but it could. So there are people saved during the tribulation, multitudes. All the Jews that remain. All Israel shall be saved, right? What's that, Romans chapter 11, verse, I can't remember. All Israel that remains, two out of three will be passed under the rod, as the book of Zechariah says again. I think those are the elect that we're talking about. He's gathering them together. They're where? In hiding, fearing for their lives. There's some in Bozrah, we call it Petra. There's some in Jerusalem. There's the worldwide elect, saved, tribulation saints, whatever you call them. Church, that ship has sailed. But he has elect of all ages. And I think we really mess up when we think of elect as church. Abraham, elect? Yes. Church? No. No. Paul, elect? Yes. Church? Yes. John the Baptist, elect? Yes. Church? No. Died pre-Pentecost. So Pentecost starts the church. The end of the church proper, the bride of Christ, is my thinking, is a trumpet sound, come up here, and the dead in Christ rise first, and we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, so shall we ever be with the Lord. Again, the word rapture that I've never really loved, the resurrection, we get dead people rising, that event, the harpazo in the Greek, okay? So this is not that. He's going to send his angels. This is the end, okay? He's coming back. Immediately, verse 29, after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, the moon shall not give her light, the stars shall fall from heaven, the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then, when? After the tribulation, the sign of the Son of Man in heaven is going to appear, right? Then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn. Why? Because they were on the wrong team. And it's going to go very poorly with them. They're going to mourn. And they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And then he shall send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, when, after the tribulation of those days, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds from one end of heaven to the other. Now, learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, you know that summer is nigh. So likewise, when you see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Now, it's a parable, and it's a parable of the fig tree. Now, sometimes the fig tree means Israel. Sometimes it means, listen, he cursed the fig tree. Previous chapter, do you remember that? Was he cursing Israel? I think he was cursing religious Israel in the sense of, and I said figs sometimes symbolic for religion. Not all the time. You remember in the kingdom age, 1,000-year millennial reign of Christ, every man under his vine and under his fig tree. He's not under Israel. The fig tree there is a symbol of blessing. And sometimes that's what we see. And we do see Israel compared to figs, sometimes rotten figs. And Israel is also compared to a grapevine. And there's three big ones. There's a fig tree, grapevine, and I can't think, I'm blocked on the other one right now. But anyway, it's not exclusively, doesn't mean Israel. Now, back in the day, it was Israel. Back when we first got saved, the rebudding of the fig tree is Israel, and that generation's not going to pass away till Christ comes back. And of course, it was proposed, you know, in 1948, Israel becomes a nation again. Generation, 40 years. So, you know, 48 in simple math, 88, Jesus has come back. And the guy wrote a book, 88 Reasons Why Jesus Will Come Back in 88. You can buy that book. It won't cost you very much these days if you can find a copy of it around. I bought it. I was so on board. No, it wasn't a Calvary Chapel pastor. But I didn't read it, and I still don't read exclusively Calvary Chapel stuff. But part of it was because I wanted Jesus to come back in 1988, and ever since. Okay? When he comes back, it's not going to upset me at all. It's going to be whatever I had planned. His plan is better, okay? That's all I'm saying. So I've always wanted that. So, you know, we bought the book, and then in 89, the sequel, 89 Reasons Why Jesus Will Come Back in 89, I didn't buy that book, okay? Fool me once, shame on you, as the saying goes, right? Why didn't it happen that way? I don't think okay. Now, learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, you know that summer is nigh. What's that saying? It's saying when the fig tree starts to turn green, it's getting close to summer. So likewise, ye, when you shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. All what things? Well, that's the whole chapter up until now. Okay? Hopefully, you'll remember some of those things. Now, I want to show you something in Luke chapter 21, if you go there right quick. We'll just look at one, two verses, okay, and we'll go right back. And if you don't, if you're not there, I'll just read Luke chapter 21. Verse 29, he spake to them a parable. Behold, the fig tree and all the trees. Now, if the fig tree is the nation Israel, what's all the trees? All the Gentile nations? I don't know. I'm asking. This is the Olivet Discourse-ish. I don't think it's the Olivet Discourse proper. He's not on the Mount of Olives. It's not nighttime. It's daytime. He's not speaking to Peter, James, John, and Andrew. He's speaking to the crowd. About the same topic, though, and so it overlaps if you read this chapter. It's very similar, but there are some notable differences. When you behold the fig tree and all the trees, when they now shoot forth, you see and you know of your own selves that summer is now nigh at hand. So likewise, when you see these things come to pass, know ye that the kingdom of God is nigh at hand. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass away till all be fulfilled. That's when we get the idea of generation in 40 years. And by the way, generation in scripture is 25, 40, 70, and 100. I can show you examples of all that. Sorry. He's thinking 48 and 100, that's 20, 40. Oh my goodness, and I'm this many. Oh, that's no good. You know what I mean? So, but think about it. He tells Abraham, your grandchildren, your children, are going to be in Egypt for four generations, and then he reiterates 400 years. Interesting. So now that's a verse that tells us that a generation, God's thinking, is 100 years. And there are those that say 40 and 70, because they were in the wilderness for a generation, 40 years. That's the most common one in our thinking. But then there's more to this than that. When his branches are tender and putteth forth leaves, you know that summer is near, close by. Likewise, when you shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. What's he talking about? He's not talking about the generation that listened to him, Peter, James, John, and Andrew. Them boys are not around anymore. What's he talking about, the generation that sees these things start to happen? Is it going to be that generation? Some have suggested generation, genos, means family, and it could be referring to Israel. I don't know. There's other scripture, you know, about Israel never passing away. I was listening to a podcast. It was in my daily Bible reading. I can't tell you which, and it was talking about, you know, God's covenant with the sun and the moon. If the sun stops rising and the moon is gone, that's when I'll stop with my, he's talking about his unconditional covenant with Abraham, with the nation Israel. Anti-Semitism, that's a bad idea. That's just a bad idea. How do we wipe out Israel? Well, first you got to wipe out the moon and the sun. And I don't know how you're going to prosper after that and take control of the whole, you know, Mideast and stuff like that with no sun or moon. But you start there, the attack there, okay? And then you'll be able to wipe out Israel. That's what God says. This generation shall not pass all these things be fulfilled. I think he's saying when these things start, they're going to start in a hurry. It's going to be like all within one generation. That's my best guess. Like I bought into that rebudding of the fig tree back along the 40 years. And again, in 1988, I gave up on that idea. But then they were saying, well, it could be 70 years, because then you'd show you a Bible verse, it was 70 years, you know, and then you're thinking, okay, 48, is okay, that's interesting, you know, and you go, and so that that would have been 2018. That's come and gone, so, you know. Then you start thinking in terms of 100 years, and you're saying, I'm not buying into this generation stuff anymore. It means something, but I think it means like Look at when you see that a fig tree starts to turn green, summer's near. Fig tree and all the trees, summer's near. So when you start seeing all this stuff, and we're talking about, you know, worldwide conflict, famines, earthquakes in diverse places, we're talking about things like that, and then all the church age stuff, and all, I think what he's talking about is that when things start coming down, they're going to come pretty rapidly. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. That's just a big statement, no matter how you cut it. We think of things of permanence. Well, the world, it's been around for what, 13 billion years, they tell us. I think slightly less, but very slightly. That's not how I'm trying to say it. I don't believe it's anywhere near that old. But it's been around for as long as I've been around, right? It's permanent. No. It's going away. My words, they're not going away. After heaven and earth is not, his words will still be. I just think that's incredible. I want to study his word. I want to study geology. It's only a temporary, it's a passing kind of thing, right? My word shall not pass away, but of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father also. In another place, he says, no one knows that day, not the angels in heaven, not even the Son. And I can't remember if that's Mark or Luke, because all three of those synoptic gospels, John doesn't have what we call the Olivet Discourse. The other three do, depending on how you rate Luke. I don't think it's the Olivet Discourse proper, but I think it's close enough. And I can't remember if it's Mark or Luke, but he says that no one knows the day of the hour. What day or what hour? When these things are going to play out. Remember, the first thing they asked him, they're on the Mount of Olives. He had just cursed the temple. Your house is left to you desolate. And they're saying, really? Have you seen this temple? Not one stone's going to be left on another. As he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be? What shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world, or the end of the age? I think they're asking one question. They think it's all concurrent, and they're right-ish. And he's saying, what you're saying, I'm telling you what's going to happen beforehand, but the date, I can't give you that. Angels don't know that. Even I don't know that. Now, you think there was a time, at least, when there was something God knew that God the Father knew that God the Son didn't know. Isn't that incredible? What, don't they talk? I don't understand that. It's crazy to me. And apparently, they've since perhaps had that conversation. I don't know. The book of the Revelation, how it starts out? Oh, you don't. Let's look at it right quick. I'm still going to get this done. Trust me, okay? The book of the revelation of Jesus Christ. The revelation is the revelation of a person. And when people say revelations, I know they never read it. It's the revelation, the revealing, the apocalypse, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him. Who's him? Exactly. Is that crazy? Hey, let me sit you down, son. Let me tell you how this is going to roll out. Jesus didn't know it? That's amazing to me. That's amazing. I don't know. Maybe it's not to you. But of that day an hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Why? God doesn't want us to know. He wants us to be ready all the time. I'm probably a good example of why. I want a 5-year plan, I want a 10-year plan, I want a 20-year plan, I want to know what's going to happen tomorrow and the next day and the day after that. I don't like surprises. if it's my birthday and somebody go in a room and everybody yells surprise, it's never happened. That wouldn't bless me. I don't want that. I don't like surprises. I don't like good surprises. I like my life to go like I want it to go. And God says, tough. It's gonna go like I want it to go. You know, I remember I told you when I was young, I prayed for $1 million. Probably a lot of people did. And he said, you know what? Keep your head down, work hard, don't say no to overtime, always be the first guy on the job, last one. I'll bless you. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of you. You know what would happen if I had $1 million? He just said, yep, here's a lottery winnings, here's a billion. What's a billion between friends? Here's all the money. Oh my goodness, he never would have done that to me. It would have ruined me for sure. I have to be the guy who goes back, Lord, give us this day our daily bread. I can't know 10 years from now. I want you to be ready today. Now, if he says, you know what, I'm coming back September 28th, 2030. Okay, I write that down. And I can send all my sin in before, you know, and or whatever, do all my stuff that I want to get done. And then right before, repent. And I think I'm past that now, right? Because I'm the guy who tells you, choose to sin, choose to suffer. There's no future in it. There's no. But you know how many people are like, oh, great, now I know when he's coming back. I'm just going to live the life. Then I'll probably a whole week before he comes back, then I'll really get very serious. No, it's better that you live your life like this could be the day. I think that's what he wants. And I've always thought that he was coming back, like real soon. And that's really served me very well. It's really served me very well. I get time to waste time. I get time to fight with my wife. I haven't got time to backslide. I haven't got time to sin up a storm. I haven't got time to... He's come back. Every day that he doesn't come back is a chance to increase my scorecard, get a little bit better rewards that I'll be able to worship him with crowns later on. But it's a story for another time. Okay, but in that day and hour knoweth no man, because that's the way I want it. No, not the angels in heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah, right, were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Now, let's take the next part after that, okay? That's separate. It's going to be like the days of Noah. What were the days of Noah? Well, it depends who you listen to. Well, they were eating and drinking. They were marrying and giving in marriage. Oh, them profligates, those gluttons, those drunkards, those immoral, adulterous, if that's the way you want to play it. And, of course, those things happened in those days. We know it was a day of great wickedness. We know it was a day of the days of the Nephilim. Is there any hint of that? I don't know. Or is he saying, hey, look, you know how it was in Noah's day? This is business as usual. They'd get up in the morning, they'd have their breakfast, have a nice cup of coffee. They weren't planning on rain. They never saw it rain before. Just business as usual. One day after next, I got a wedding on Saturday. You going? Oh, you going that way? Yeah, we'll have a good time. And then, you know, they were marrying. They were giving their children marriage. They're having kids, next generation, boom. Just business as usual. Until Noah got into the ark. God closed the door. Noah didn't close the door. It wasn't Noah's judgment. It was God's. Then the rains came. Boy, you're pounding on that door. Hey, open up. I changed my mind. So, Ted, too bad. Too late. Is that what he's saying? I almost think so. That's the way I lean. Why? And they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. He's saying there's business as usual, or up to the time it's not business as usual anymore. I got plenty of time. There are two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road you're on. I know it's true. Led Zeppelin sang it, right? And Stairway to Heaven. Until there's not time, and there's no two roads anymore, and now it's too late. Now trumpet sounds, and I'm still here. Uh-oh, that's a bad day. As a matter of fact, that's what he's talking about next. I went back and forth with this because I read too much commentary, and I don't always read the best commentaries. I don't. I like to listen to what the other people say, and sometimes they have convinced me. So this, look at in chronological order, you know, it's the end of the tribulation, and now then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken, the other left. Two shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken, the other left. I missed one, right? Anyway, so now that's it, and that's the end when he comes back. So what does that mean? One is taken off to judgment, and one's going to be okay. And they're going to, you know, I'll deal with you later. We'll give you rewards or whatever you got coming. You're going to be the sheep in the sheep and goats judgment. And I thought that was, but I don't think that. I haven't for a long season. He's talking about the day and the hour knows no man. When all these things are going to come to pass. Like, it's going to be like Noah and the ark. What do you mean? Well, then shall two be in the field. The one shall be taken and the other left. What's he talking about? What do you think he's talking about? The rapture of the church. Once the trumpet blows, look, it's a twinkling of an eye. 1 Corinthians 15. You don't have time to jump on board. I changed my mind. There shall be two in the field. The one shall be taken, the other left. Two shall, women is there, right? But it's in italics. It was added. It's a woman's work, and I'm not trying to be sexist. I'm trying to say in those days, women did the grinding at the mill. The one shall be taken, the other left. It's in, I think, Mark, where it's two in the bed. And it says two men, but it's again, men is italic, so it's just two in bed. Who are two in bed? I sleep in bed with somebody. You're not probably too surprised. Married couples sleep together, one taken, one left. Nah, you wouldn't split up a marriage. Yeah. If you're both on board, great. You know, a rapture together, that'd be tremendous. Hey, honey, see ya. Good luck. Hope it works out for you as you're rising up. See how I made the guy the good guy? Yeah. Two in the field, one taken, one left. Two grinding at the mill, one taken, one left. What's it? What is he talking about? He's talking about like Noah. Judgment came, and it was all of a sudden. It was business as usual until it wasn't. And that's what I think he's talking about. The rapture. Business as usual. And all of a sudden, what? Hundreds of millions? What would you say? $8 billion, right? Over a billion of those are Muslim. Another billion are Buddhists, right? And Hindus, right? So now we're down, we got like 4 million left. I don't know. And then, of course, like, I don't think God grades on a curve. Like, how Christian are you? Like, we're going to, you know, if you're really living the life. Some people believe that. I remember we were playing softball, and some church lady said, oh, that's worldly. Worldly is defined as anything that I don't care about. I don't put much in that. That's worldly, you know what I mean? So if Jesus came back and he caught us playing softball, he'd just leave us right behind because we were doing worldly stuff. No, this is that teaching out there. I'm not of that ilk. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. And can I just add, doth come for the church. I think I know the hour that Jesus comes. No, I really, really do. 7 years after the signing of the covenant with death. You know, we looked at this, Daniel chapter 9. The prince that shall come, he's going to enforce a covenant with the many, a euphemism for Israel. It's a 7 year, 1 week. And I think that's concurrent with the time of Jacob's trouble, the tribulation, the 70th week of Daniel. It's got a lot of names. And prior to that, the church is out of here. How far prior to that? I don't know. I don't know. No one knows the day or the hour. But if we're talking about the second coming of Jesus Christ, I think we can get, I'm talking 7 years to the minute, I think, because that's how God does things. And then if you lose count, you get a mid-year, you get a mid-term correction here, 3.5 years, when Satan enters into the temple, the rebuilt temple, and we looked at why that must be. We talked about the abomination that causes desolation last week. We looked at that, I think, covered it. And 3.5 years after that, Jesus is coming back. Oh, I think we know when Jesus is coming back. I don't think there's any doubt of that. But we don't know when he's coming back for his church. And that's always the problem. There's two returns. One is he's just coming back for his church. He's not coming back to the earth to establish his kingdom. He's coming to take a bride. And I think those are at least 7 years apart. When he's coming back, we'll definitely know. Well, one, we're going with, because when once we're with him, we're with him forever, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. But the watch, therefore, if you know what not hour your Lord doth come, what does that mean to watch? Get saved. Because I think that's the prerequisite. I think that's the what you need. Do you have to be awake? You have to be awake spiritually. I mean, he's coming when two are asleep in bed. One is going to go, one's not, right? So it's not a question of wakefulness in the sense of like, I'm up, alert, I've had my coffee, I've read the paper, I've walked the dog, I'm ready, okay? You know, I put my house coat away, I got my clothes on, I'm ready to go, I've got my ascension robe. What is it being ready? Ready means spiritually ready. I know people who think in terms of like, Lord, not now. Wait till my wife's black eye heals. Wait till I sober up. Wait till I beat this pornography or this drug addiction or this. Even Christians, like, not now, not now. I gotta. Ready is ready. Today's a good day, Lord. Today would be excellent. And if not, I can live with tomorrow. I've been doing that for 40-something years, right? And it, like I said, it's served me well. It's funny to me, when I first became an electrician at 25 years old, you know, there was talk about Social Security and retirement and, you know, put that money away for any day when you don't want to depend on the government. When you get there, you want to have, you know, a couple of nickels to rub together and, yeah, I don't know. That's never going to happen. All right, and some would say, well, who cares? Leave it for somebody else then. You'll be gone. You'll be happy. You're going to a place where the street is gold. You ain't going to worry about, no, you know, what am I going to eat? What am I going to drink? Where am I going to live? It's all provided for, okay? So I'm kind of glad I did now that I've reached retirement age. You know, I'm kind of glad that there is a thing called Social Security. I'm glad there is 401ks and IRAs and all that good, happy stuff. But I never planned. You plan long term, but play your short game too. Like, he could be coming today. I'm just going to, like, again, 40 years from now, he'll come and that'll be good. No. No. But know this. Watch therefore. For you know not what hour your Lord doth come for the church. I'm just going to add that. But know this, that if the goodman of the house had known in which watched, the thief would come. He would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. That's obvious, right? And that's why thieves, they never give you an email. Hey, I'll be here four in the morning. You'd be up. You have your Roscoe all loaded. You'd be, you know, you have this cop speed dial. You're all set. No big deal, right? But thieves don't do that. The element of surprise is what they're after. Know that if the goodman of the house, who's the goodman of the house? Don't say Jesus, it's Satan. Goodman doesn't mean the good man, it means the owner of the house. Jesus is the thief. He's coming like a thief in the night. What? To spoil the goodman, the Satan. He's going to spoil his goods. In other words, he's going to take all his stuff. Like what? You and me. He had a claim to us at one time. Okay? Disannulled. Power of the blood. Saved. New contract. But if Satan knew, so one of the reasons that you don't know the day of the hour is because Satan doesn't know the day of the hour. It's not published anywhere, and God wants it that way. Then Satan will come up with his ridiculous story, that his narrative, let's put it that way. Many, many will believe it, obviously. Obviously. Okay, that's fine. We'll be watching it from the mezzanine, not a problem. Whatever they buy into. But you know what's sad? Because we all know some people are going to be at this point left behind. I have an idea that some people who have witnessed to, a certain son that I have, or, you know, different friends who I've talked with, I have an idea they'll come to the front and they'll smarten up at that point. Can they get saved? Yeah. Will they pay for it with their lives? Maybe. Will they join the church? No. Bride of Christ, that ship has sailed. Can they get saved? Can they be the elect? Can they be here when Christ returns? There will be people here still. The whole planet won't die. There'll be saved people and still lost people when Jesus comes back. Be ready. For in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. And there's been the prognosticators. A lot of dates have come and gone. All right? And I can tell you who and when and what they said, and we can all laugh at them. But there'll be more. I was watching one last year. And it was this prophet on YouTube. And Jesus was coming back to take his church last September. And the reason, you know, because when he was praying, God had revealed to him. And so he said, he had some sort of fleece that, show me it'll be this September, because that's what he was really convicted about. And he showed a cloud formation that supposedly looked like an S. And that was his... No, I'm serious. I could probably look that video. He probably took it down. He's probably too embarrassed. But watching, I'm thinking, boy, I hope he's right. I know he's not, but I mean, I hope he is, you know, because September... I think it was like August the last year. I'm thinking, well, September's good with me. I missed that golf tournament. But that'll be all right. That'll be all right, you know. I mean, as always, like I say, well, always what God's got planned is always better than we got planned. So it's good. But he wasn't right. But there's myriads. Oh, I've got it figured out. You pull up, start Rapture 2020, Rapture 2021, Rapture 2022, and there'll probably be people who haven't taken them down, and you'll see all the reasons why Jesus was going to come back in 20 and 21 and 22, and go, I don't know, go back as many years as you want to waste time watching videos. Anyway, he won't tell us. He wants us to always live in a expectancy. If it's not pre-tribulation rapture, This is called imminence. Live like he wants us to think in terms that he would come at any time. Imminent. If it's mid-trib or post-trib or post-wrath or a pre-wrath, I mean, there's all mixtures of these. Imminence isn't a thing. It's just not. You know, you could set your watch by, okay, tribulation started, signing of the covenant with death, right? The Antichrist, and who's not supposed to appear until after the church has been taken. We looked at that last week in Thessalonians. But there's no imminence. Imminence presupposes that we don't know, and you have to live in this state of expectancy. And I think verses like this teach that. Therefore, be also ready from such an hour as ye think not. The Son of Man cometh. He's not going to come in an hour when I think not, because I always think he's coming every minute of every day. I'm just all set. So he's not going to sneak up on me. I'm just saying. I think he's saying, live in with expectancy. If you're living in the ark, what do you care when it starts to rain? You hear a door slam shut and you say, okay, it's go time. You're all excited, but you're not all nerved up. Oh, I probably got a few more days before that. They take the gangplank up and they start closing the door. I probably got to, no, you always got to be ready. And I think that's the Noah, what that's all about. Who then is faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Shall find so believing? No, well, we're going to learn in James today, Sunday. There's a doing aspect to our faith. We don't get to heaven by doing, we get to heaven by faith. But if the faith that we have is real and legitimate faith, we'll be doing. It's viewed by activity. And he's saying the same thing. We're talking who's faithful, full of faith, right? Who's wise? When the Lord, whom his Lord hath made him rule over his house. In other words, occupy till I come, take care of stuff. And then to give them meat in due season, you know, deal out the rations, to do what I've called you to do. You know, here you go, this is your job function. And then when you're doing that, when he comes back and he finds you actively doing what he's called you to do, whatever that looks like. He gives us an example here, but don't think in just those terms. Because when you're his servant, am I giving meat in due season? Yeah, right now. That's one of my job descriptions, right? If he comes back and I'm teaching the Word of God, that would be a happy day for me. Or if I'm studying to teach next, I'm good with that. If he finds me playing softball, oh, that would be horrible. That would be just, it would be horrible for me. I'm just saying. I got to tell you this. This is just ludicrous and silly. It really is. The other night I had a dream. I was playing softball. That's why I'm thinking softball. And Jesus was on the other team, which really was disturbing because I like to be on Team Jesus. I always think of myself on the same team, but he was on the other team. And he was up to bat. Yeah, he was wearing he wasn't wearing like softball clothes. He was wearing his robe and sandals. And he was like Jim Caviezel, you know, the Passion, Jesus. He looked kind of like that. I knew in my dream it was Jesus. And you know what I mean? Like I'd always pictured him or, you know, similar. And so he's up to bat. And by the way, he bats right-handed. I have an idea he could probably bat right, left-handed, whatever. But he was batting right-handed at the time. And I was playing first base. And he hit a ball like a rocket off the bat, just hit it a ton right at me, and I caught it, just snatched it right out of air. And so he's jogging back to the dugout, and he winks at me in my dream. I could have crushed that at him, but I wanted to let you, you know, make a catch there, make a play and stuff. He winked at me like, you know, I could have hit that right through you if I wanted to, but I I'll let you make a play. That's what he said to me with his wink. And the fact that he winked at me, I thought was so cool and so endearing. Okay, I don't dream like this often. I don't think I've ever had a sports dream that involved Jesus, okay? So we're going to be starting a sports, we're going to be starting a softball league. And I used to play softball in a church league, loved it. I was in my 30s, okay? So that was a minute or two ago, right? So anyway, that was the dream. And I woke up and I felt like, this is the weirdest thing. I really believe God sometimes will speak to us in dreams. That one, not so much. That had probably more to do with pepperoni because it was Tuesday night, right? So that was probably had more to do with pepperoni than anything God speaking to my heart. But anyway, it was funny. I've told a few people that, and they'll look at me like, "You're such a weird person. I think you don't know the half of it." Anyway, blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. He wants us to be, you know, I don't care about death. You know, Abraham Lincoln said it doesn't matter when you die, because they were warning him and saying, you know, it's not going to go well. A lot of people want to kill you now. He's like, yeah, as long as you die at your post, your place of honor, with your boots on. He sure did. That's how I feel. I don't want to be found doing what he called me to do, as long as I can do it. But that's fine for me, but I don't think he's talking to me. I think he's talking to all of us. Be faithful to what he's called you to, and make your calling and election sure. Lord, what is it you require of me? What is it you want me to do? There you go. Verily I say unto you, truly, listen, I'm not lying to you about this. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. There's a reward for faithfulness. That's not the first time we've seen that. Okay, we looked, and it's the bema seat of Christ's judgment, right? Wood, hay, and stubble. Ooh. Gold, silver, precious stones. What's it all about? Do what I told you to do. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming. You know, I know a lot of people. I could name his name. I don't want to defame. He said, I don't know if I even believe in the rapture. Not a Calvary Chapel guy. Do you believe in the resurrection? That'd be my question to him. And he'd say yes. Heard him teach on that. And that's our fault for naming it stupid, right? I don't know where a Christian doesn't believe in the resurrection. Again, mom didn't believe in the rapture. I said, do you believe in the resurrection? But dead people rise. They just haven't figured it. They think it's like a progressive revelation. But when you die, do you get your body right then? I don't think so. But, you know, even Catholic, we'd say we believe in the resurrection dead. No, it's an event. It happens in stages. We'll touch on that some other time. But it's an event. It's not a... But if that evil servant should say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming. Why would somebody do that? Because I got my own agenda. And once we figure out we're the servants of the Lord, but if, blessed is that servant, once we figure out we're his slave, Lord, you say jump, I say how high. You say do, and I say okay, immediately, yes, sir. Aye, Captain, right away, to the best of our ability, as soon as we can. That's how we live. And then life becomes a lot more simple, I'll tell you that. But if that evil servant shall say, my Lord delayeth his coming, I got my own stuff to do, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants. The Church of Jesus Christ arranges its firing squads in circles. It's crazy. We smite our fellow servants. My thinking is that guy's on my team. If he's on team Jesus, if he loves the Lord, and he's on my side. Okay, his theology might be a little askew. Well, let me see if I can help him out. Not arrogantly, because there's room for good men to have different ideas about some things. But you begin to smite your fellow servant, to eat and to drink with the drunken. That same guy I was just talking about doesn't believe in the rapture. He's pro-alcohol guy. He is so, oh, you got to drink that good wine, not that cheap box stuff, but the good wine like Jesus drank. I don't want to be known as pro-alcohol. I'm not death on alcohol. I just wouldn't touch a drop of it, and I think that's the wisest choice. But I'm not, you know me, I'm not like, you better stop drinking, you bunch of, but I would never promote. And then somebody's like falling off the wagon, falling under the wheels, dragged by the horses for miles. I don't want to be responsible for that. I think I could have a drink and not be a drunkard. Because I did in my life before as a Christian, right? But I don't know if that's true of everybody. And you're not going to hear me say, "Well, go ahead and try it. Have a little. It's fine." But it seems like the people who are saying, yeah, he'll come back whenever. It's not, we're not in the end times. There are also the people who say, yeah, alcohol, yeah, it's fine. It's not fine. It's not fine. I used to do that. I was a sinner. I didn't know the Lord, and I used to get drunk all the time. And then I became a Christian. I thought, like, I don't know. That's probably not a good testimony. Snot hanging drunk, babbling like an idiot. I don't think that's probably the best look. So let's get rid of that in my life. He's going to smite his fellow servants to eat and drink with the drunken. The Lord of that servant. And now, is he a servant? Jesus says he is. The Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Does this sound like hell? Or does it sound just like great remorse? Well, you can be the judge of that, okay? I don't want to find out. I don't want to be in that category. I already think, like, you know, Jesus says, you know, every idle word you say, you're going to be given account of in the day of judgment. I'm thinking, please don't make that sound like it obviously says it sounds. I already got my own stuff to deal with. I don't want to add to it. You know, I don't want to know what having a portion with the hypocrites. I don't know what that looks like. I don't want there to be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Is the weeping just like, I could have served them more. I could have really made hay for the Lord. I really could have. Now look, it's judgment day, and look at me. I never really was all in. I was kind of iffy about, you know, I'll serve you-ish. I'll kind of half-heartedly follow you. I'll do some stuff, you know. But I'm not all in. We always want to hold back a little bit, right? No, all in. Total head first, dive right in, worry about the repercussions later. Or in Bible terminology, offer your body a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto the Lord. It's only reasonable. It's a reasonable service. There is act of worship. How do I worship God? You died for this bag of bones. Here it is, all yours. You want me? Really? You want me on your team? Okay. I want that too. And holding nothing back.